This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live. HRRN
Live. But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Way Lucas. Trainer D-Way Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oakland.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We do extend a very special welcome to all of you just joining us across this great land of ours on Sirius Channel 93. And for those of you who have been with us over the past 3 hours with Ella Starr, Chad Summers, and Sean Feld with our racing coverage from Saratoga and Del Mar, welcome back to the program. And of course, for everybody tuning in worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net, we do welcome you to this edition of Trainer Talk. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, he's the pontiff of the Pick Four, and JT, another exciting show on tap for this evening.
Yeah, I can't wait. Both these guys are really nice fellas and have great stories.
Well, this is the show that trainers listen to, and we begin with our very first guest this evening, and he has a career record which stands at 1,014 total winners to date with more than $37 million in purse earnings. The 55-year-old native of Rochester, New York, he goes simply by the name of Bond, James Bond. And he's with us here tonight on Trainer Talk. Jim, I'm sure you haven't heard that a million times in your life. I could have come up with a more original way to introduce you, right?
Well, it's the first time for everything, you know?
Well, your legal name, Harold James Bond, but you go by James, and your parents, when they named you James Bond, had to have some idea that this was going to happen.
Well, I think I'm a little bit before. I think that the James Bond theme itself probably took off, but not so sure. I think it was in the early 60s. But again, everybody calls me Jim, and like, of course, the 07 kind of caught on, and you know, we kind of went forward with it over the years, and it's been catchy. And you know, most people kind of see the saddle cloths going by and the horses, and you know, kind of like it.
I love it. I love seeing your saddle tails. I think it's so cool.
Well, like I say, it's pretty catchy, especially here at Saratoga during this time of year, because we have a lot of sets going back and forth, kind of down the road on Gridley Avenue to the main course, and we stop a lot of traffic with them, needless to say.
Well, you've gone pretty much by your middle name for the majority of your life, because if I'm not mistaken, everyone called you 007 when you were growing up, right? Wasn't that kind of your nickname?
That's 100%. Yeah, that I was always, you know, 007 or Jim or 007 and a half. Ray Lassesi, a gentleman that owned Fiorito, always used to call me 007 and a half. God rest his soul, a nice fine gentleman he was. So,
well, you grew up around horses and around racing, like so many trainers that we've had the opportunity to talk to on this show. So take us back to the beginning and tell us how James Bond got hooked on horse racing.
Well, I was lucky enough to have a great father that loved horses, and unfortunately didn't have a lot of money to do anything about it, but we had some riding horses that we turned into show horses, and he was from a show horse background. And unfortunately, like I say, we got kind of hooked up. The Blue Ribbons didn't pay many bills, so we started getting into racehorses when I was probably about 8-10 years old, and the bottom line was, you know, a couple of victories here and a couple of victories there, and I guess my dad was, a pretty good horseman. He didn't have a lot of horses to deal with, but he taught me basically the patience of you'll wait and take care of them, they'll take care of you. And here I am today, and I'm pretty fortunate and wish he was still around to see it.
Well, with over 1,000 victories, you must have learned a lot from him and from being around the horses. Talk about the edge that gives you when you grow up around the animals.
Well, like I say, I mean, you know, to cut your teeth, I grew up around the Finger Lakes area, and there still is, but there's some great horsemen that came out of there and, you know, didn't get the breaks that I got with owners and what have you. But, you know, without exaggeration, some of the trainers that, you know, worked around there in the early years, Bill Strange, and, you know, some of y'all remember some of the old hard workers, Dan Conway Sr., and, just, you know, great, great people. And Bill White, who's down at Calder now, he was from that area. I spoke to him actually this morning, and you know, just it's amazing. Like some of the people that came out of there, Stanley Huff, he was there in the early years in the 60s and things like that. And, you know, so there was a lot of great people that, you know, I learned a lot of great things from. And like I say, everybody was really just good sportsmen. I mean, it was a different era, and you know, everybody kind of helped one another, and it was a lot of fun.
Did you know instantly that you wanted to be a horse trainer when you were hanging out around your dad's stable?
Well, in fairness, I actually was studying to be a veterinarian, and my father had some health issues when I was about 15, and I had a great guidance counselor that actually kind of set up my schooling, so I would get the basically out of school by 11 o'clock in the morning and right back to the track. And there was a great lady named Shirley Wright that her husband was a horse trainer, and now their son Jimmy Wright's a horse trainer at Finger Lakes and goes to Florida in the winter. And they used to get me rides back and forth to school to the track, and I was just the luckiest person to grow up around that area. And like I say, it was a little bit of a hardship in my early years for my father, and we kept things going, my mother and I. And when I was 16, I got my trainer's license, and I kind of went out on my own. My dad and I kind of separated, and we, you know, we had a pretty good year the first year or two, and then all of a sudden I realized how tough it was, and it was we went from eating steak to eating hot dogs for a while. And, but like I say, I think it was probably a good thing, because you learn a lot more when you're starving, they say.
When you mentioned getting your trainer's license at 16, you were saddling horses even before that point, weren't you?
I was. Yeah, like I said, my dad was pretty sick, and my mother and I, we had about 35 horses at Finger Lakes and always did pretty well there. And, you know, they're still learning my dad's name, but basically my mom and I were kind of in charge. And like I said, I galloped horses and ponied horses and just about everything you could possibly think of. And like I say, cut my teeth pretty young. And, you know, again, it was a great place to learn. And, you know, there was, you know, horses with a lot of problems, and that's the only way you learn is when you have a lot of problems to deal with. And so, like I say, I was probably pretty fortunate at the time. Didn't realize it because all I was doing was working. But it was was all good in the end.
Yeah, that's the key when you have a lot of cheaper horses starting out. You learn how to take care of their problems, and you know the good horses get just as many problems, sometimes more problems than the cheap horses because they run a lot faster. But you hear a lot of jocks getting their license at 16, but for trainers, that's almost unheard of, and that's a tremendous amount of pressure for a young fella to have to deal with.
Well, like I say, I was very fortunate because my dad had a lot of friends, and, you know, like I say, there's a lot of people that, you know, would, you know, kind of say, you know, might want to try this son instead of trying that, and so, like I say, it wasn't all me, and my mom was always a worker. She was a great, great lady, and like I say, just we had, you know, some good riders at the time. There was Jackie Fires was riding for my dad, Early's brother, and now Jackie's, you know, of course, got some problems now. And we used to have all the Fire boys were blacksmiths for us and things like that. So, you know, my father had set up a pretty good team around us. So we were just kind of keeping the ball rolling, I guess you would say.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, it was a different time, and trainers used to help one another out and that. Talk about the difference now and how much tougher it is now, because it's not as genial as it used to be.
Yeah, it's funny because I was actually talking to David Jacobson yesterday and John Service yesterday. We're just kind of talking on the fence here at Saratoga, you know, and it used to be, like I say, years ago, gosh, I mean, when you had a big Saturday, everybody was on the fence, you know, on the backside, just cheering for the other guy. And, you know, it's kind of a shame, but, you know, I guess it's maybe the almighty dollar today. And, you know, the pressure of, you know, everybody can see what our percentages are and how we're doing and what we're doing right, and what we're doing wrong. And, you know, it's very, you know, kind of cutthroat today. It's kind of a shame. And everybody wants your telephone so they can get your owner's numbers today. It's a different world, of course. And, you know, the whole world has changed, needless to say, but it was a lot of fun back then. I mean, I don't, you know, begrudge where I am today. I'm very happy. But again, those days were, you know, probably a little easier on you mentally and physically because, again, you had, I think, a lot more true friends, and it was just a different era.
Trainer, James Bond joining us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fazit Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jim, was there ever anybody else outside of your dad that you had an opportunity to work with and learn from as you were in the early stages of beginning to train horses?
Well, I had actually a stint. I was at Penn National in Old Keystone, and I had some bad horses, and they needed a break. So I turned them all out, and I went to Florida, and I went to work galloping some horses for Noel Hickey. He had a assistant that was an old friend, John Shields, and I galloped horses. I used to get on a horse, That's a Nice, and a couple other nice horses he had. And Noel, like I say, was very kind, and like I say, let me get on a few of them better horses, and I was still cutting my teeth, needless to say, but I was in awe. And then I worked the two-year-old sale for him and things, and that was the only stint that I really, you know, had outside of my own operation. But I was always kind of paying attention to the big guys. I was in awe when I got the Gulfstream the first time to, you know, see the Alan Jerkins of the world and people like that, you know, were always my, just watching them on, you know, ABC, CBS, or ESPN television and on weekends for the big races and, you know, just, you know, never thought that I would ever get to shake their hand.
Jim, is it true that when you graduated from high school, most kids would accept a car from their parents if they offered one, but you had a different thing in mind that you wanted?
Well, I never said I had a lot of brains, but yeah, I did. I did get a horse, and her name was Passion, and she did wind up winning a race. But I can still remember her problems after I claimed her. But anyway, probably the car would have been a little smarter because the car didn't eat as much. But it was a good lesson in life, and I guess it just showed how much I did like horses, and I guess I was just destined to keep going.
That first horse that you own is always one that you remember, but you do that to this day. You dabble with a horse or two here or there for your own account.
Yeah, my wife and I we had a little farm that we were in partnership up in the Finger Lakes area years ago, and you know, the New York program has been very good, and we've had you know, a few horses that we've either had for ourselves or clients that, you know, did pretty well, and I was lucky enough to train for a lot of the top New York breeders over the years. And unfortunately, all I do is horses. I don't golf much, and I don't do much else, and I've always kind of liked having a farm. And we have a little farm here the other side of Saratoga Lake, and it's, you know, it's pretty nice. It's, you know, it's got some layups. Steve Asmussen, among others, sent some horses out there sometimes, and we have about a dozen mares of our own, and a lot of a few Tisway babies on the ground. And, you know, it's a kind of a little bit of, as my wife says, that is my retirement someday, to keep us married together, to keep me out of the house. it's worked out pretty good for us. You know, we had a few lean years over the few years ago, and they kind of kept us going, and which is probably suicide. But, you know, the New York program has been very strong the last year or two now, and looks like we've got a little bit of a future to it for a while. And like I say, we've got some awfully nice pedigrees and pretty good mares. So I'm kind of excited to see some of these hopefully, you know, run, and we'll sell a few and hopefully reap some breeders' awards. But it's a good, you know, mixture with the racing stable, because maybe when one's doing good, the other one's not doing so good. So it's a little bit of a mixture.
Well, your wife, Tina, intimately involved with your operation for sure. But talk about your entire family, Jim, and it really is a family operation with the James Bond Racing Stable.
Yeah, very, very, very fortunate. I mean, this is a very tough, as my wife would say, this is a lifestyle, and it's very tough. My wife worked with Eastman Kodak for 17 years. She had a pretty good executive job, and they offered her an early buyout, and she took it, and she may regret it, because now she kind of runs the books for me, and probably she had a lot more benefits working for them than she does for me. But the bottom line is, you know, we are together, and you know, she kind of keeps the farm manageable for me, and you know, we do the racing end of it, and she owns a lot of these young horses that we have, and we get stuck every once in a while with a few older horses that we have to take over. But the bottom line, it's been really good. And my oldest son, Kevin, he graduated from Lynn University in Boca Raton, Florida, and a few years ago, and I had an assistant that had been with me a while, but was a little, just kind of looking to switch ideas, and I took my son Kevin on, and he's done a great job for us, and you know, really proud to have him in the barn. And you know, there's a lot of times there's nothing like family to, they realize that the bills have got to be paid and we've got to keep good people in the barn working for us. And so you need to really buckle down. And, you know, I guess blood is thicker than water sometimes. So it's worked out very well for us. Everyone kind of says that maybe it's not the best way to go, but I'm very, very pleased with what's happened for us. And my youngest son, Ryan, just went back to school. He's in his last year at FAU for a financial major, and I'm not sure what he's going to do after that, but the way the world is today, but he may be back here, or he'll carry on, or maybe he'll help his mother run the books or something.
Yeah, she'd probably appreciate a little help with that, free her up to do some other things.
I bet you would.
You know, Jim, I think every father would be flattered that their children want to follow in their footsteps. There must be an enormous sense of pride on your part that your kids do want to be around this and you know, kind of do the same thing that you're doing.
Well, like I said, the first probably 17 or 18 years, unfortunately, I was always on the road between New York, Finger Lakes, Saratoga, and everywhere else, and then Florida in the winter. And, you know, I wasn't there for a lot of those baseball games and football games that, you know, thank God they had a great mother. And, you know, a lot of the other trainers out there know exactly where I'm coming from, because always these four-legged creatures, when they whinny, we jump. And, you know, and that's kind of the lifestyle we've taken. And it's a tough life, but also there's a lot of rewards, because, you know, both boys have been to Dubai. They've, you know, been all over the world. They've met some really nice people. And, you know, I think they're very worldly for it. So, you know, when I'm long gone, they're going to have a lot of, you know, I think good memories. And then, you know, they'll be able to pick up pretty well, because they've met some fine people in this world.
Yeah, I know a lot of kids grow up in racing families, and they can see how hard it is, but it doesn't hinder them at all from taking it up later on in life. And I think that's a tribute to our business and the lifestyle, as your wife likes to say. You know, it is a way of life, and everything revolves around the horses, but it's so intoxicating that when you're around it all the time, you can't help but fall in love with it.
Exactly. I really was trying to push my oldest son kind of away from the game, because, of course, as I, you know, related to earlier, the game has changed a lot, and it's a lot tougher. I mean, it's, you know, like I say, you know, we didn't have cell phones and fax machines and computers that, you know, pull up instant things on you today, and you can have an owner today and he can be gone tomorrow. And, you know, we had, you know, personally about three owners die in the last 4 or 5 years, which, like I say, just, you know, they were great owners. And in the early years, they were just filling us with horses. And it was awfully nice to sit there and, you know, just watch them keep coming in. But, you know, when it gets a little bit lean, you know, say, well, boy, I don't know if this is the right thing, because it was a lot of old money. And, you know, it's a different style today. And there's more partnerships and what have you. And, you know, a lot of people, when you tell them a horse needs some time, they kind of look at you like, well, how much time? And, you know, it's kind of like doing it the right way or not. And, you know, I've always been kind of the long-term person, and it's a little hard for the financial person to understand that. And I do understand what they're talking about, but I think the best owners make the best horses, because it's a big financial, you know, basically blow that, you know, when you got to send a horse to the farm for 3 or 4 months and let them, you know, recoup per se, instead of just possibly injecting him and, you know, running him cheaper, maybe just, you know, ended that horse's career basically to be a good horse. And it's, you know, it's a tough call, and you just listen to a dumb trainer and a veterinarian possibly. It's you know, it's got to be tough from a business person standpoint, just listening to us. So
yeah, and interesting that you would mention the owners that you've been associated with, Jim, because so many trainers that appear on this show will tell us that the owners are really what got them to where they are today. Talk about some of those owners you've been fortunate enough to be associated with over the years.
I was lucky enough, of course, to start with Virginia Kraft Faison. I mean, she was just, I was sitting in my tack room at Finger Lakes, and I think it was March of that year that she first sent horses to me, and I don't think I had 7 or 8 horses that, I mean, not one of them probably were worth more than $5,000. And I got a phone call, and I'll never forget. It was just freezing cold, and I got to the call. Entered the call. It was like 5:30 in the morning. It was Virginia Kraft Faison, and she asked me if I might take some horses that were running in New York for the winter and wanted to send them to Finger Lakes. And boy, I mean, it was just a phone call that, you know, just unbelievable. I almost fell down instead of sitting down. And you know, the horses started coming in, and the first horse we ran set a track record. And I mean, it was just Dick Lundy was just getting ready to switch jobs to go to work for Mr. Paulson. And, you know, I had sent her a letter basically kind of showing her where some of those New York bred she had running in the city in the winter, you know, would had a few more conditions at Finger Lakes. And like I say, you know, my wife with her great background of writing great letters, and you know, it's always been a family thing. And basically that was, you know, one of the big doors that opened for me personally for better than 13 years. And the Rudline stable, which is Mr. and Mrs. Rudder down in Ann Rudder, they of course had Will's Way in partnership with Mr. Clifton, and they had a lot of homebred New York breds, and they were just outstanding to me. I mean, I just, you know, I can't say enough good things. They went to the sales and let me buy some nice horses, and they introduced me to Mr. Clifton. Mr. Rudder was in business with Mr. Clifton, and some other things. And like I say, we, you know, got Mr. Clifton aboard, and you know, he was part of Will's Way and a lot of other good horses we had, and of course all of Tis Way, and we just clicked. And you know, I had Jim Edwards from the from New York, who, you know, is one of the pioneers in the New York breeding program. He had Keen Stud and the Stallion Park, and again, you know, just great people. And then the late Jerry Nielsen, who of course was president of the New York Breeders, and you know, we just hit it off so great. And poor man died way too young. And like I say, I've just been blessed by great owners, and I do mean, you know, great owners make great horses. Because again, you know, when you need to tell them like it is, some can take it and some can't. And that's the hardest part of this game. And you know, some understand, you know, you don't want it to happen, and nobody does, but you got to train these horses every day, and you got to train hard when you're running in New York and you're running against the best. You've got to train pretty hard to be there, because at the 16th pole, they're not going to give you a break. They're going to come running at you. So
that's one of the hallmarks of your operation, I think, and of you, is your honesty. I mean, anybody that has had horses with you that I've talked to, that's what they love most about you, I think.
Well, like I say, it's, you know, you'll have to get it. Bad news travels, unfortunately, very fast, and you might as well just get it off your chest as soon as you possibly can. And, you know, maybe there's a different avenue or a different way that we can all make it happen. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to have just great people that I can express the facts to. And, you know, we judge what we've got to do. Is there an exit plan, or what do we have to do and to make a bad situation a little bit better? And like I say, nobody likes bad news, but, you know, I guess you show me a true leader, and he knows how to handle it and how to get out of it. And I've been just, again, very fortunate to have those kind of owners.
Talking with trainer James Bond on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Jim, believe it or not, just 3 or 4 minutes left here before we have to wrap up. Chris Block coming up in the second half of the program tonight. But do want to ask you about some of the equine stars you've been associated with. There's been Barons, there's been Will's Way, there's been Buddha, and there's been Tis Way.
I've been lucky enough to, you know, say I've had Barons. I went to Dubai with him, and I think one of the greatest races was over there in Dubai with Dubai Millennium. I mean, he just, that night, he just made me so proud. I mean, Dubai Millennium, I dare say, might be one of the best horses the Sheiks have ever had. And you know, he was the only horse that ran at him. You know, Le Carrier was the very first Dubai World Cup, of course, and he was a New York bred by Mrs. Payson Stallion at the time. And he, you know, just Cardin Asker, and he went over there with Cigar, and of course Soul the Matter, and three, you know, basically owners that bred their own horses run 1, 2, 3 in the inaugural Breeders or Dubai World Cup, which is just a hoot and a half to be there. And as Mrs. Payson said, she said, I can afford to be here, but I can't afford to be at this table. This horse and you brought me here. And, you know, I will never forget those words out of her mouth, because it was a magical, magical carpet ride, as she would say. And it was just unbelievable to be there the first year. And, you know, things were a little bit primitive in the beginning, but boy, they sure built off of it very quickly. And, you know, we were lucky enough. We had Buddha. We almost got to the Derby with him the day before he came up with a foot problem. And, you know, we had Tis Way, of course, and our stable pony is a kind of a great story. 17 now, a horse called Pleasant Breeze. He made a little over $1.2 million. And he won the Saratoga up here twice. I think he was second at the Pimlico Special. And he's our stable pony that goes back and forth with the horses here all the time. And it just got kind of nice to see. And we just actually, Barron's just came back from California, and he's going to be retired here shortly to old friends in the Saratoga area here. And we just brought him back and for retirement, Mr. Clifton did. And like I say, we've been just fortunate to have great owners to give us, you know, some pretty nice horses to play with.
Well, Jim, you're going to have to promise to come back on with us again up the road, because we could spend another half hour hearing the stories of Barron's and Will's Way and Buddha and Tiz Way. We're just scratching the surface on those horses now, but we've really enjoyed hearing your background and how you got started in the game and some of the people that helped you along the way. And you're a class act. You put the game's best foot forward all the time, and we can't thank you enough for being with us here tonight.
It was a real pleasure, and thank you very much for inviting me, and hope to talk to you all soon again.
All right, we appreciate it. James Bond, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. And don't forget that all of our guests who appear on the program are going to receive gifts from a couple of our sponsors, EPO Equine and Flair Equine Nasal Strip. So we'll get those over to Jim. But Jude, what a great story, and somebody who really is a true credit to the game.
Yeah, well, I met Jim up at Saratoga a couple of years ago and took an instant liking to him. He's a very classy man and really does everything the right way. So was glad we could have him on tonight.
Yeah, and really looking forward to our second guest as well. That's trainer Chris Block. He's an Illinois bred, and he's trained so many outstanding Illinois bred runners. So we're going to talk to him about those horses. We'll also hear his background story and how he got into the game. Somewhat similar to Jim in terms of, I'm going to save that for Chris to tell.
Good idea.
Yeah, good idea. We'll hear from Chris in his own words.
For the half hour.
All right, we'll do that next. Trainer Chris Block coming up on the second half of Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Tipton welcomes nominations now for the November sale, the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world. 15 horses in 2012 sold for $1 million and higher, more than any other mixed sale in the world. Exceptional weanling market, with foals selling for up to $620,000. Horse of the Year Hover de Grace sold for $10 million, the world's highest priced auction thoroughbred of 2012. The November sale at Fasig Tipton in Kentucky. Nominate now.
Now you can help your equine athlete heal faster and recover stronger with Ultras Elite, a wearable low-intensity therapeutic ultrasound system that has been used successfully to treat splints, suspensory ligament and tendon injuries, muscle strains, stiff joints, and bone fractures. Ultras Elite is clinically proven to reduce swelling and inflammation, increase joint flexibility, and reduce pain and irritation. For more information, visit ultras.com. Ultras, heal faster, recover stronger.
EPO Equine, the all-natural, healthy, safe, and legal blood builder, would like to extend a special congratulations to Nick and Martha Gonzalez and the entire team of this year's Queen's Plate winner, Midnight Aria, as well as Tony Alanya and all the connections of the remarkable Captain Treacherous, winner of the Metro and Meadowlands Pace. To learn more about how EPO Equine can help your equine athlete reach its true potential, contact Joe Valente at 215-501-6880 or visit epoequine.com. I'm here with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair, makers of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, here in North America, horsemen are protecting their horses with Flair strips. Are the strips benefiting horses in other parts of the world?
Mike, horsemen around the world use the strips to protect lung health. For example, South African Horse of the Year Variety Club regularly races with a strip. In South Africa, many graded stakes, including Grade 1 stakes, have been won in 2013 by horses wearing the strips. In New Zealand, Reigning Horse of the Year Mufasa races with a strip, as well as many thoroughbred and standardbred stakes winners in Singapore and Australasia this season.
To learn more, visit flairstrips.com.
RaceHorseReport.com.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it? What is it, baby?
International racing, weekend stakes recaps, always free selections, great stories, workout information, racing news, handicapping tips, spot plays, and more.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Join thousands of other thoroughbred racing fans by going to RaceHorseReport.com. Make RaceHorseReport.com your number one source for thoroughbred racing information.
That's great.
RaceHorseReport.com.
We'll be right back.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live, presented by Phasic Tipton.
Welcome back to the second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A really enjoyable visit with trainer James Bond in the first half of the program. And looking forward to the second half here with trainer Chris Block coming up in just a moment. But do want to remind you that if you missed any portion of this particular show tonight, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes as well, and listen to the podcast at your leisure. Of course, all of our Trainer Talk shows archived on our website, all at horseracingradio.net. And JT, we now turn our attention to an Illinois bred through and through, 46-year-old Chris Block, who is a native of Philo, Illinois. Earlier this year, he eclipsed the 1,000 career victory milestone. His win total now stands at 1,027. His runners have earned nearly $34 million in purse earnings. And for Chris Block, it truly is a family affair. And we welcome him to the program here tonight. Chris, welcome to Trainer Talk.
Thanks so much for having me.
How are things at Arlington?
Things are wonderful. Beautiful facility and hopefully fast horses, but everything is good.
Well, Illinois, a very special place for you. Obviously, you went to school in Illinois. You've really never left the state, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's correct, yes. I'm born and raised here, went to school here, and set my roots up here at the racetrack, both Arlington and Hawthorne. And my family and we're major committed to the Illinois program, and we've got a large breeding program of about 30 brood mares, a couple stallions, and we've been in the business probably 40-plus years, and we're a team that works well together, and I appreciate all that my family does for me, and I'm a public stable, but half the horses in the barn are family bred and raised.
Team Block. You see that almost everywhere. And what always amazes me about watching your stable over the years is you go up to Illinois, where you're from, where everybody knows how good of a trainer you are, and you'll have like a $40 winner on Arlington Million Day almost every year. How is that? How do the locals ignore you?
Well, I think this year that filly kind of slipped through the cracks on some people. I think she had poor form up until her last prior race to the Hotouf that she ran in here the other day, or on Million Day. And I saw her, the price rising as the day went on, or went on through the post parade, and I thought, oh, they're overlooking her. But I guess it happens at times. But we bring them up there ready to go every time, and it doesn't always work out, of course. But we try to take our best shot anytime we lead one up there.
Well, you have a lot of homebreds, and you do it kind of the hard way. I mean, it's easier to go buy horses that are good looking and well bred, but you raise them, and of course a lot of your horses are good looking and well bred, but they're so talented, and you've really done a great job developing the whole program. It's not just the training aspect, but the breeding and the racing and the whole nine yards. It's really a phenomenal operation, and I admire you a lot.
Well, I appreciate that, and I have to give my dad, my mom, and my brother a lot of credit there, because they're the ones behind the breeding of all these homebreds that we have. Specifically, my dad, he lines up all the matings. He knows nicking. He likes to nick and does a great job of it. studies breeding very, very closely. And I have to give him the credit. I mean, he formulates the breeding and the matings, raises them himself there in Philo. And then we have a farm in Ocala, Florida, where we prepare them for the racetrack, and then they're sent to me. So I get the product, and I usually get a very, very good start when they come to me. I've got a lot to work with, and very fortunate for that, that's for sure.
Hey, your father, David, your mother, Patricia, of course, your brother, Ryan, your sister, Dina, also involved on some level as well, right?
Yes. Yes, she is. Yeah, she's part of the family, part of the program, part of the team.
What was it like for you? You're growing up, you're a kid in Philo, you're hanging out around horses all the time, around the farm, around the racetrack. Talk about that. Talk about growing up in the business and being around it from a very young age.
Well, I was, when my dad got involved on a very hobby type basis at with a cheap horse at Fairmount Park, he would let me tag along with him to the races. And that's how I really got the bug for horse racing. I was enamored with the horses first, and then the jockeys, and then just the racing part of it itself. I just found it to be something that was that I really became in love with. And any opportunity I got to go with him as I was growing up to go to the racetrack, it was I was in the car with him, whether it's a St. Louis or Chicago. And when he became more involved, and started to build the farm there in Philo, then horses became part of my life as well at the farm. So, original thoughts are, well, you want to be a jockey, and I mean, that was never going to materialize because I'm 6'1", and I was growing fast, so I knew that wasn't going to happen. But as I got into my high school years, I decided that training was something that interests me a lot. And when I graduated from Villa Grove High School, my intent was to find a way to get myself educated to a degree on training racehorses. So I enrolled into a equine management program in a junior college there in Champaign, Illinois. I graduated from there, and then set out to, at the time, my dad had horses with Bill Mott. And so I asked Bill if it was possible that I could, get my feet wet there with him. And he was gracious enough to take me on. And, I was a hot walker and a groom. And at one point, it got to be where my dad was having a hard time finding somebody he was real comfortable with as a trainer. So he was very, very brave, I guess is the word to say for it. And I went about to get my trainer's license at Churchill a couple years after I started working for Bill. And my dad gave me 6 2-year-olds to work with to start off with. And then he bought me a couple horses that were of racing age. And I basically, with what I learned from Bill and learned through college there about the horse in general, I went about learning the basics and then took it from there. I had an idea of what I wanted to do with each horse, and I was basically a work in progress, and not many guys get that opportunity to do what I did. And I'm very, very fortunate that my mom and dad put a lot of trust in me to take on the responsibility of training the family horses, and it evolved, and I learned a lot on my own and a lot from my dad. And what I did learn from Bill was probably the biggest thing I learned from Bill was patience, and that was something I had a hard time doing early on for the first 10 years of training racehorses. I was more wanting to rush things, and I kept trying to push back and say no. One thing I always remember with Bill, you got to be patient. So but I'm very fortunate to be where I'm at today. Count my blessings every day that I have the quality of horses that I do, the clients that I do, and the people who work for me, who've been with me for a long time. I just can't say enough about them as well.
There's always an interesting dynamic when you train for your parents because you have a hard time telling them no. did that yeah, happen to you? It's hard
true,
to argue with
true.
Your dad.
We work well together. I mean, my dad and I, and my brother, we work really close on picking hopefully the right spots for a lot of these horses. And we have our disagreements, but I think that's a good thing because we sort through what we think are the positive and negatives and look at each other's side and see what makes the most sense and try to make the right decision.
Trainer Chris Block, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fazit Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Chris, not many people have the opportunity to come up and learn under a Hall of Fame trainer like Bill Mott. Do you still keep in touch with him? Are there still times that you'll call him or see him at a racetrack and kind of be cordial with each other and maybe ask him a little bit more advice, or how does that
work?
Well,
no, I'm very cordial with each other. Bill's a class act and always enjoy talking to him. I've never really, point blank asked him. I think it's kind of a point now. I mean, if I did have something that I was really stumped by, I would probably give him a call, but I've surrounded myself with people here in Chicago that I have a lot of respect for and kind of lean on those guys now. I've learned a lot on my own, and I look back at my experiences that I've had where I've learned from my mistakes, and I've kept those logged deeply in my mind and know kind of how to react to situations now that come about. But a lot of that is, came from Bill when I worked for him. But also, this is a situation where I have a lot of people here as well that I've become close to that I lean on for help.
Yeah, nothing beats the learn by doing method. I mean, when it's your name there, even when you're an assistant trainer, it's not the same pressure as when it says Chris Block in the program. And I don't think there's anything that beats learn by doing when you're training horses.
Oh no, there's no question. I have two assistants that work closely with me. Those guys are in. You can't put a value on them. And you're only as good as your help. I mean, you can have fast horses in the barn, but I truly believe if you don't have the right help around with those horses, a lot of mistakes can happen. And you certainly want to surround yourself with the right people to help move your program forward. And I've been very fortunate that we have that in our barn.
Well, Chris, you've certainly worked very hard to make a name for yourself, and you've done that now. Chris Block is a known name coast to coast when it comes to training horses. And I mentioned that 1,000th career winner coming earlier this year on January 12th. That was at Gulfstream when All For Thee rallied to get up and win that race. You weren't even there for it, right, if I'm not mistaken?
No, that's correct. I was there. I was there a couple days before. Thought it was a possibility that I could get it then. All For Thee was basically we were running on the dirt for the first time, and I came back home for some meetings that were taking place at the Horsemen's Association here that I'm on the board for. So, well, my parents were there to represent me, and I was proud that they were there.
Did you get to watch the race?
I did. I sure did.
So what was that moment like? You're not there, but you see that horse cross the line. You get number 1,000. We hear a lot of trainers talk about the pressure building up to a milestone. Were you feeling any of that?
Actually, no. I mean, I didn't even know I was even close to it. Jim Miller, who works for Hawthorne, came to me when I was, I think, three away from it. And I didn't even realize I was that close. He told me that, and then, of course, everybody was watching it from that point forward. But I really didn't let that bother me because I knew at some point it was going to come, and when I didn't know. But that day was more, for me, it was more of trying to find out for All For Thee how to get her to start performing better for us. We thought when we bought her, she had run well in the dirt. But we thought she might be a turf filly, and we failed miserably at that. So we were trying to get her back on course, and I didn't expect her to win, but I thought she'd run well. But when she turned for home and and I thought we had a big chance of it. It ran through my head, but I was actually more watching her and how she was performing than thinking about it.
Spoken like a true trainer.
Chris, you've been associated with so many top horses over the years, a Giant Oak, a Vicari, Never Retreat, Mr. Mardi Gras. Take us through some of those horses and the ones that are, you know, truly special to you.
Well, you know, there's any of the homebreds, you know, Mystery Giver was one that was, I was really, you know, fond of. He was a horse that, that the family really kind of put the family name out there. For Prado, it's probably my favorite of all time. I mean, he ran on any surface at any distance, at numerous racetracks, took me everywhere. You know, he's real fond. I'm real fond of him as well. Vicari, you know, first grade one, of course, sits really close to my heart, and she was just a phenomenal and very talented filly. I mean, she wasn't in my barn long. I mean, we sold her there after that race, after the Queen Elizabeth, but she's close to me. And, you know, Giant Oak was a horse that, you know, I was possibly on the Derby trail, so he kind of took us places that no one ever thought we'd be able to go, and he was a horse that was very frustrating, but yet again, a lot of fun because, you know, he's always going to run a big race. He didn't win often, but we had a lot of fun with him as well. Never Retreat, she's probably ranked right up there with Ford Prado because she was a filly that I really had a hard time. We bought her privately. I had a hard time finding out how to get her into what she was happy with. And when we found what the key was, it was just incredible to watch her blossom and then go on to be the filly that she was. It was just remarkable. I mean, you felt good every morning you got up on how to handle her. And you knew if you handle her that way and she was going to train well up to the next race that you're going to get a top, top performance out of her. So it was fun. She took us a lot of places that we never expect us to go. I mean, when you run in the kind of races that she was running in, boy, I was really, really proud to lead her up there to the paddock on those days.
One of my favorite horses of yours is Leading Astray. Haven't seen her in a while.
Well, Leading Astray had a big year last year as a three-year-old and had her at Gulfstream during the winter, and she ended up with an injury that was unfortunately career-ending. But she's now in foal and will be a broodmare for added to our broodmare band. And hopefully she'll produce runners that were as effective as her. It was a shame that her career was cut short because I think the possibilities were pretty strong for her to have a huge four-year-old season. But it's horse racing. It's one of the many things that we deal with, as everybody knows. But you have to pick yourself up and go on, and hopefully her career, like I said, her career as a broodmare will be as successful as it was as a racehorse.
Yeah, she won a lot of races, 5 out of 6 or something like that?
Correct. Yeah. Yes, she did.
Amazing.
Chris, obviously you've trained multiple Illinois bred horses of the year, and I know that's a big thing for you being an Illinois bred yourself, but is there even a greater sense of pride when you can take a horse that's bred in your home state and compete on the bigger scale? You mentioned Vicari, although she wasn't an Illinois bred, but you won the QE2, but you've taken these horses like Giant Oak and Fort Prado, and you've won big races all over the country. Talk about that. Is there an extra sense of pride when you're able to do that?
Well, sure, because you're going to another state into a big race and basically representing the state of Illinois, as I look at it, in the breeding program in Illinois. So, it's there's a lot of, in my opinion, a lot of pride that goes into it, especially with a homebred. I mean, with one that you've bred and raised here in the heart of Illinois, that can go compete in Kentucky, Florida, Canada, wherever it might be. You know, there's quite a bit of pride that comes with that. When we lead one over there, we're thinking that, well, here we are with a horse that was bred, right, raised in the state of Illinois, that's out here with all the other, well-bred ones throughout the state or throughout the country. And, you know, it's something to be quite proud of.
Yeah, what's that feeling like when you walk into the paddock with a horse that's been a homebred that you've done everything with right from the start, and now you show up at a big race, say at Keeneland or whether it's Gulfstream or somewhere in New York, wherever it may be, outside of Illinois. What's that feeling like when you do walk into the paddock and you realize, hey, I'm on the big stage and I've done this as a grassroots effort right from the time I was little with my parents and done this the right way?
Well, you know, first of all, there's a lot of hard work that goes into it, so you're looking at the fruits of your labor that have brought you there. Second of all, you know, the big picture of it is when you walk into a paddock like Keeneland or Churchill or anywhere in New York, Saratoga, you know, as a guy that doesn't go there often, you're in awe at that kind of thing. But I also keep in perspective that I'm there with a horse that deserves to be there, and you know that you brought there with a good chance, and then you're also proud of that fact that you're there, because not many people get that opportunity. So I don't take it for granted, and I appreciate it when it does happen.
What do you remember about the day in 2010 when you saddled Giant Oak in the Breeders' Cup Marathon? That had to be a special day.
Yeah, it was. It was, I've been to many Breeders' Cups, never participated in one. That was a day that I didn't feel, a lot of times I feel a little pressure when you lead one over there in races like that, but I didn't that day. I just felt like I'm going to enjoy the moment, be part of the Breeders' Cup experience. And, it was a lot of fun. And, I remember specifically in the paddock, just enjoying the thought process that here we are in the Breeders' Cup and a Breeders' Cup race, and with a big chance to run well in it. And it was a day that I'll remember forever, because I had friends with me, and of course the owners of Giant Oak were there, and I think we all had a really good time.
Trainer Chris Block, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So Chris, what does the future hold for Team Block? What can we look forward to?
Well, we're solidly committed here to the Illinois program. Illinois racing needs a boost right now. We're kind of a state, one of those states that's been struggling over the course of the last 10 to 15 years to maintain purses to keep the industry vibrant. So there's been many attempts in the state capitol here to pass legislation that would put alternative gaming at the racetrack, and which would absolutely turn the industry around and move it forward, not only for racing but for breeding. So we're hoping that happens, and we've got a large investment into one of our stallions, Fort Prado. We've been standing him in stud now for 3 seasons. I've got a bunch of 2-year-olds here at the track right now. They're getting ready to make their first start, so that's kind of exciting for us to see how that pans out. But we're committed to it, and we're in here for the long haul, and we're really hopeful that something will take place here that will turn racing around here in Illinois and move it forward, because there is a lot of prospect here in Illinois. I mean, it's an agricultural state. A lot of ag is involved with horse racing here in Illinois, and we support it wholeheartedly. And we've got a big investment, of which we want to maintain here. We don't want to move anywhere else. This is our home. This is where I grew up. This is where my family is. And we'd like to see it get better and stronger and continue to build as the years go forward.
Arlington Park, such a spectacular venue for racing. It's my favorite racetrack in the United States. So beautiful. And everybody that goes to Arlington Million seems to have a good time. And you know, when we travel around, we've been going up to the Arlington Million for 9 years, I think. It's amazing. People at the hotels and stuff, oh, there's a race this week. Oh, you know, and you just go, this is Chicago. I mean, come on, people, get with it.
It's a shame, because, you know, the Arlington Million years ago was the race that everybody talked about in the month of August. And I know there's a lot of big races throughout the country now, that are on the same day, but nonetheless, it's a phenomenal day of racing here that, I think Arlington has tried very, very hard and will continue to try hard to keep in the public's eye. But it's kind of a shame that more people don't know about it. And like I said, if we can get Illinois back on the map here as one of the premier states in racing, I think that'll all come with it as well.
Chris, what are a couple of things that people may not know about Chris Block? Some of the hobbies you might have outside of the racetrack and things you like to do.
Well, I enjoy sports. I'm a big fan of the Chicago Bears, and so I'm a big football fan.
Is it Cubs or White Sox?
I enjoy golf once in a while, not often, but when I do get a chance to play, I do play a little golf. And I enjoy my family, my immediate family, and I enjoy being with them. And I enjoy just being a lot of times at the racetrack. I mean, I'm a kind of guy that, especially at Arlington, that the beauty of the racetrack and the beauty of the horses. But I'm also willing to get away from the racetrack at times because it is 7 days a week, and we work awful hard at it. But those are the kind of things I like to do.
Cubs or White Sox?
Oh, I'm a Cub fan. Near and dear to the heart, a Cub fan. I'll always be one, and it's frustrating, but nonetheless, I'm still a big Cub fan.
Well, they beat the Dodgers last night. Looked pretty good. You have a lot of turf horses, and of course Arlington is a great place for turf racing. But you send a lot of them down to New Orleans for the winter time. I think you send a few to Neil Pessin. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have in the past. We've kind of got away from that a little bit the last couple of years, and we've been sending some to Gulfstream, a small stream to Gulfstream. With turf that are turf horses, it's sometimes if there's one that fits the program for the fairgrounds and we need turf, sometimes we'll send one down there as well.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That Pessin guy, I don't know about him.
That with Fort Prado being your new stallion, how are those horses coming around? Do you look for turf for them or dirt or both or?
Well, they're coming along really well. I mean, he's surprisingly, he's not a, you know, he's an El Prado, and El Prados aren't typically big stallions. But he's put out a lot of nice foals with a lot of substance to them, and good minds. And my hope is that, Fort Prado really didn't get going until he was October of his 2-year-old season when he made his first start. So we got to be patient. I think we got a lot of opportunity here going forward with the ones we have. And I don't know exactly what their best surface is going to be yet, but my hunch is probably turf will probably be the best surface for the better ones. But I'm not ruling out that they won't run on the dirt as well.
Well, Chris, we can't thank you enough for spending a little time with us here tonight on Trainer Talk. It's been a lot of fun to hear your story, and want to wish you and Team Block all the best moving forward here, and all the best looking for that next 1,000 victories in your career.
Oh, thanks so much. I appreciate it, and enjoyed being on.
All right, thanks so much, Chris Block. Team Block, they do a tremendous job. A lot of fun to hear his story, JT. And we want to remind all of our listeners that our guests who appear live on the program are going to receive gifts from a couple of our sponsors, Flair Equine Nasal Strips, and our good friend Joey Diamond with EPO Equine, the fellow Paisan. He'll send them a little gift there for appearing on the show.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. It's a great bunch of gifts that the trainers get, and we love having them on.
And if you did miss any of our interview with trainer James Bond in the first half of the program or with Chris here in the second half, go back to our website later on this afternoon and you can hear, or later on tonight, I should say, and you can hear that in its entirety at your leisure with our podcast at horseracingradio.net. Listen to all of our Trainer Talk shows that we've done over the course of the past several months. They really are amazing to go back and listen to and hear the stories of so many top trainers. You can also listen on iTunes, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes, so download it there as well.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable to have so many people come up to us at Saratoga and say how much they enjoyed the Trainer Talk shows. Because we enjoy doing them, and it's a lot of fun for us to be able to sit down with these trainers for half an hour or an hour, depending, and talk to them. So we appreciate everybody listening, and it was nice to hear the kind comments.
Make sure you join us tomorrow as well. Chad Summers, Ellis Starr, and Sean Fell going to be back with you 3 to 6 Eastern time with our live racing coverage from Saratoga and Del Mar on XM209 and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. And then tomorrow night, our BristNet.com call-in show is from 6 to 7, your chance to talk racing with our panel of experts. And of course, on Friday, live racing coverage 3 to 6, and the Express Bet Weekend Stakes preview from 6 to 7, our Equine Forum show Saturday morning from 8 to 10. So a lot of things to look forward to this week here on HRN. You can visit horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule.
Beautiful.
Been fun, JT. For our producer, Lee Delapina, Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.
Good night, Barbados.